This week on the Dragzine podcast, the world's leading radio tire promoter Donald Long makes his return to the Dragzine podcast to talk radio versus the world, No Mercy 10, rules, and his new class. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beams. The Dragzine podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week, Donald Long joins us once again to talk about No Mercy, kind of gearing up for that, what's been going on in the radio tire world, and a new class that he's got cooked up. So, without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest on the Dragzine Podcast right now is radio tire promoter Donald Long. What's going on, Duck?
What's going on, brother? Thanks for having me.
Oh, not much. It's once again that magical time of the year where the weather's changing and it's time to go back down to Georgia for some radial tire racing and whatnot.
You know, I'm getting pumped up about it. You know how it is. I gotta have the. I feel like I'm back with family when I got the radial guys around me. So they're kind of like my bodyguard.
Oh yeah, and it's been like. Yeah, I got to go to Lights Out, amazing event. Then you had the insanity of the Sweet 16. And it's like everything's been building once again to this event. And it's, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And kind of, you know, the Sweet 16, we saw the first 350 pass. And
yes.
Then it's like, what's going to happen next? And then the shakedown comes. And Marcus lays down that ridiculous number. I mean, what are your thoughts on that now that it's kind of marinated and sunk in a little bit more?
Well, I think that we've always said from the beginning, when I talked to Stevie Jackson before, Stevie felt like the nitrous cars could go 355, you know, and everybody told him he was out of his mind, you know, and that's when Stevie told me, he said, Stevie was just saying at the time, he said, I know that, he goes, if I can't go a 363 with a 9, he goes, I'll move out of the country and never come back. And so I posted that up on social media, and of course I got jumped on, and then people started calling Stevie and all that, you know, because he was going to be helping Marcus Burt, you know, try to take this thing to the next level. And so when they came out, you got to realize they was only like 5 runs into it when it went a 60 flat. You know, they were already geared up and gunned up to go 57 or 58. And, you know, obviously, you know, the timing belt broke. And so it was just a matter of getting good conditions and good air again. Because at the Sweet 16, it's, you know, it is a like all out, no holes barred, you know, it's a fight to the end. It's a home run derby. It's like, let's qualify 11 or 12 times. So the numbers don't surprise me, and it's not done yet.
Oh yeah. That, you know, it's always kind of when we really start taking in and looking at the very big picture over the past couple years and how all radial tire cars have been picking up so much that the question has now become, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When are they going to make the technology and the conditions work together to make something crazy happen again?
Yeah, and here's the deal. You know, if you look at the Sweet 16, it's, and this is what's kind of, I think people lose a little sight over it because, you know, when this first got introduced and the whole radio versus the world thing took off in 2010, I don't think anybody ever really gave it any, like, you know, look into the future of, hey, we're looking at the fastest 16 car door car field in the history of the sport of drag racing. Forget about wheelie bars, you know, forget about pro mods, big tires and all that. The Sweet 16 is still the fastest 16 car door field in the history of the sport in the 8th mile racing. So it's there a lot. It's just amazing to me, you know, that without wheelie bars, without big tires, that these guys could be this fast.
Oh, it's nuts. It truly is insane. And it makes you I'm always looking at going, you know, what's going to be the next breakthrough? What's going to happen next? And speaking of the Sweet 16, I do have a slight side question for you. Do you get kickback money from the engine builders and the transmission guys due to the sheer amount of carnage that comes out of that event?
I should be getting 30% on all that. Like, far as I'm concerned, Pat Musi owes me $30,000 off that $100,000 sale to Marcus Burt off that timing belt breakage. Oh. You know. But to no mercy though, real fast, this isn't gonna be a deal where we're setting any new records. This not in my opinion. This is a deal where it's the start of the next 3 or 4 months of just total chaos that's going to be coming between No Mercy, between Orlando Speed World with the Orlando World Street Nationals, going to U.S. Street Nationals down in Bradenton with Rado versus the World, coming back up to Lights Out in February, going to the Sweet 16, and then heading off to the Outlaw Street Car Reunion. This is just the start of 4 or 5 months of just total chaos, I'm telling you right now.
Oh, I'd buy that for $2 right there. I mean, that's just 100% spot on with what these guys, and we've talked about this before with tuners, and I've talked this to you, that these guys, they figure stuff out with, you know, they're tuning multiple cars and they start taking and piecing all that information together, making it work with different combinations. And it's just, you know, it's only a matter of time before we see a blower car rip off some stupid number. You know, that's the next thing you're going to see, I think.
Yeah, and absolutely. And here's the deal. You know, some people think he's a little arrogant, you know, whatever. But, you know, and everybody always says, oh, you're always riding, Stevie, you know, this and that. And so, and here's the deal, though. You know, Stevie Jackson, I mean, he's an innovator. He goes out there, you know, he's a pioneer of stuff. And like Stevie told me, you know, he said, hey, listen, he goes, I'm only going to be out front here on this nitrous deal, you know, for 6 months or a year. He goes, once we show them that it can go this fast, they're going to catch up. You know what I'm saying? The Lizzie Musi stuff, the Tommy Franklin, the pro nitrous, the deal with Jay Cox, you know, Little Country. Everybody will, they're already starting to go faster, because once somebody proves that it can be done, then they know they can do it, you know, and that's the whole thing. And Stevie, you know, as much as, you know, some people, they don't like the way first of all, Stevie is one of the best things that's ever happened in the entire world to the sport of drag racing. Let me just say that. He's got the character that it takes. And let me tell you something. He backs up whatever he says. And I love him because he is into the small tire stuff along with everything else. But Stevie's going to show everybody, even with the blower, I think the other day, what did he go? 60 flat, 59. Yeah. I can't remember what he went. But he's going to, once he shows everybody that it can be done, then everybody's going to fall in line and they're going to be able to do it.
Oh, yeah, totally. You see that happen time and time again with all these combinations, that people start figuring something out, and it might not be a direct copy. They'll figure out a way to tweak it. And, you know, it's almost like what it's not quite what you might see with the Bruder brothers, where they find a way to tweak a combo and then everybody else either jumps on it or, you know, they find a way to do it. It's the same thing with what Stevie does and what the Pro Lines guys do with the turbo cars, is they find a way to make it work and then everybody else kind of catches up. And then it's, you know, what's going to be their next move?
Right, and that's going to be the thing. Who will be the next guy? It may not be Stevie next. I mean, if you look back, let's go back to 2000, even before I started getting just all into it, 2007, 8, 9, and then coming into 2010, you know, in that 8, 9, 10, when I came into it, you know, David Wolf was the man. He could set out 2 years and come in and be 0.2 faster than the entire field. You know, and people would say, oh, you can't, there's no way anybody can ever go faster than 460. You know, David Wolf came out and shocked the world when he went 440 flat.
Oh, yeah. And it's almost interesting to say that now, because that would barely qualify you for X275 races now.
Yeah, I mean, Ultra Street's going 450s. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a huge amount of difference. And obviously, technology plays a lot. I mean, listen, the shocks and the airbag, all these things that go on, You have to be all around. You can't just be an engine builder, engine tuner. You have to have an all-around team to be able to have a car with no wheelie bars going 1960 foots out there, and keeping the thing also from taking flight and flying up into the stand somewhere.
Oh yeah, I think that even more transcends pretty much all forms of heads-up drag racing, because you can go out and buy a 360 car and a 360 package, power-wise,
Yes.
but power management ain't cheap and knowledge ain't cheap or free, and you got to figure that out. That's, you see guys that have the same combos that just can't do it because they can't get all the pieces put together.
And that's why actually Radio versus the World has retired millionaires. I'm serious. It's taken millionaires and just pushed them right out because just because you have the money to go down somewhere and buy what you need to go fast, if you don't know what you're doing with it, you're wasting your time. I'm just telling you right now. You have to know what you're doing, even if you have the right parts.
Oh yeah, it really, really comes down to that. I've been a part of that with a team, and I've seen it with other teams that, the Ohio boys up here up north, they would go out and race every freaking weekend. I mean, they would put stupid amounts of laps on a heads up car, but it came down to the point where they had it figured out where they could roll in the gates, miss two qualifiers, and qualify number one or number two. They'd look at all their logbooks, be like, all right, punch it in, let's do it. And that's it. And it's because of know-how and experience.
It is absolutely. And you have to. That's why I love this deal is because, and listen, I can't afford to go out there and run Radio versus the World either. But let's all face it. Like, there's kind of like a bad car accident or a train wreck. You got to kind of look over and see what's going on. And that's the way this RVW thing is. And that's what brings the excitement to it because you go to the Sweet 16, I saw some guys go through three engines out there. I had Stevie Jackson call me after the race and said, listen, I love your races, but he goes, I got a professional team out here and I can't keep up with the amount of qualifiers you got going on. So, it's kind of a that particular race is one of them deals where, they can't stand it not to go qualify. Like I said, hey man, all you got to do is just qualify two or three times. They can't stand it to let somebody else go up there and qualify and them not get a chance at it.
Oh yeah, they're data whores. They want to figure
Yeah.
something out.
Yeah, their egos and their data collection won't let them miss it.
Yeah, they're like data hoarders. Instead of having 50,000 cats, they have all these different run datas that they want to look at and overlap and tweak slightly. And that's really, you look at just all the things that it takes to make these cars go fast. That's what you got to do. And it ain't cheap to make it happen, that's for sure.
No, it's a very, as far as like I said, not just on RVW, but it is very fun to watch these guys put all the time and effort and passes that it takes to be able to compete at that top level.
Oh, and kind of going off of that, then you roll into, X275, which is probably, in my opinion, that's one of the most, that's like the comp eliminator of heads up drag racing, because it's so just nasty and difficult to get in. And you look at the Sweet 16 and what happened there and what's been transpiring, and coming into No Mercy, that's going to be an interesting party to watch.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you. I don't know if you've kept up with the whole Rob Goss versus Charles Hull fiasco going on right now,
Oh, that's been
but
fantastic.
yeah.
Fan-freaking-tastic.
So it's I'm I never knew if those guys like if a class because you have to have characters in a class. If not, it's just another class that sits there and you can run it and go, hey, look, we got so and so coming up. But if you have the characters in the class to take it to the next level, and I didn't know that we actually had that in, the Rob Goss and the Charles Hull. Obviously you got the Bruder brothers, and you have a couple other people out there. But I'm glad to see those guys actually getting online and having fun instead of just bashing each other all the time about rules. That's what I don't think. To a certain point, you want to have a little bit of drama and you want, but X275 needs to have more of the the Rob Goss and Charles Hull than we need to have of the constant complaining and bashing the rulemakers and stuff like that.
Oh, I 110% agree. And, you know, I told John Sears, I was like, dude, my heart goes out to you. Anytime you, he must hit like publish for the rules and then just turn his phone off and bury it, because otherwise it would like melt down like a nuclear reactor, because you're not going to make everybody happy. End of discussion there.
No, you're not. And, you know, we have a new class fixing to come out, DXP Street, and we're trying to, you know, cross all T's and dot the I's on it. And you know, it's not what I guess I'm trying to even say about the DXP Street deal is that it's not for everybody, Brian. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this might not be your class. You know, there's plenty of Ultra Street next to 275 and RVW. And maybe this isn't your class, but I want to have it. I'm hoping to have a good dialogue with the racers over the DXP Street deal and get a class to where, you know, you ain't using that entry level term, but at least, I don't know, let's have fun with the class. And if you got some junk laying around your garage, you know, that's been sitting there and you can't keep up with the other stuff, I'd love for these guys to come out and have a good time with it.
And it can be done. But again, the precedent, and people have to understand that there's going to be limits set, and you know, you can't whine your way into getting a combo out there because, oh, well, I should be able to do this. And you know, it's like what Jason Ruckert said, well, prove it. I'm not going to change a rule until you come out and prove that the combo either can do it or needs help. And then you have to keep a very judicious and tight control on it, because otherwise it'll spin out of control.
Oh, it does quickly. You know how that is. I mean, you know, it's like Ultra Street, in my opinion. You know, I don't like where Ultra Street is at. You know, I liked Ultra Street when, you know, when it was Ultimate Street and we had it between 490s and 510. That's where I like, you know, as, cause you know, it's, hey, it's called Ultimate Street, you know, and now we got guys going 450s in it because it just, it's a little too lax for me, and that's fine, you know, but let's get a class that's not like that, you know, for the, I'll say average guy, but you know, somebody who's into the racing deal that can afford a little bit of money, you know, can't afford RVW X275, but you know, there's plenty of people who have, SVO blocks, the Dart blocks, you know, there's a lot of that stuff out there. You know, old Yates heads, C3 heads, you know what I mean? There's a lot of LS stuff out there. I think that there's enough things out there, enough product to where people for a reasonable amount of money can buy a $250 nitrous plate, can buy a $600 or $700 carburetor and come out and have a good time with it.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat, and it just comes down to, you know, sticking hard with the rules, and people are going to try to find the gray areas to work. That's what racers do. But
yeah, absolutely.
And you got to be, you know, like Yogi Bear Spitz, you know, smarter than the average bear to keep ahead on that and have people that know, you know a little bit of cheating or attempts to cheat when they see it. You know, that's what it, you know, it comes down to. And I agree that having a class that's a little bit, you know, on the edge like that, maybe some of the older stuff you'd see in the NMRA and the NMCA, that you keep it in check so it doesn't turn into some complete, you know, disaster.
And that's what I want to make sure of. I don't want to release something that we haven't put some time and effort and thought into. And that's why, you know, I have Roger Conley out there, you know, helping work on this situation. You know, he does stuff now with NMCA, NMRA. And I'm trying to get it where it's right. Obviously everybody can overlook or make mistakes, but this class isn't going to be about, you know, how much can we cheat to get in. We're not going to allow, somebody with something just because they, you know, they're trying to shift either way in. This is not the class for them.
Yeah. And you said there's a lot of different ways to control it, and you know, the unmodified parts rules, and you have to use specific part numbers and this, that, and the other. That's, you know, that's how you kind of go about that to make sure that people don't try to do the real funky stuff to find a way to cheat, which I don't understand why some people need to do that in racing, like out and out cheat, you know, with modifying stuff. But, you know, I guess there's a difference between, I guess what I'm trying to get at, between cheating and being innovative. There's a distinct line of demarcation there.
There is, and hopefully we're gonna get some great people. There's some great racers out there, so hopefully we're gonna get hopefully I'm sure we'll have a bad apple here or there, but I'm hoping that everybody's excited. They want to come out and do it, and it'll be another fun thing to add to what we're already doing.
Yeah. And, kind of looking off of that, what we've got coming into No Mercy and, Radio versus the World, that's already out there, that's going to be an absolutely insane class. X275 after the Sweet 16, the World Series of X275, that's going to be awesome. And then you have one of my favorite classes, Limited Drag Radio, coming in because of the variety of that class. And they're wrapping up their championship at No Mercy, correct?
Yes, and I think they're also all, they're kind of all getting close to breaking on the door of that 399 run, aren't they? I mean, I think we're already into the 40 something. I don't think it would happen at No Mercy. It's probably not going to be cool enough with good enough air, but I think in the next couple of months it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that Jason and Tyler are going to get together and try to find a, because they're like at four, I think it's 40, it's like a 408 or 405 maybe the record, but still, it's like when you look at the qualifying sheets for that stuff, what I consider the normal conditions of the in the heat of the year, the normal part, not home run conditions, it's still very tight racing.
Yes, it's a good class, and when everything was first being put together on that deal, that's why I agreed not to pay more than $5,000. We were trying to keep it in check, with money also with, but again, it's like when that class first, they're wanting to try to keep everybody thinking the 450 range, and it's very difficult to pick. That's why people ask me about even DXV Street. Well, what's the range of the thing? It's so difficult because everybody is so smart and there's so much technology out there. It's very difficult. And like I said, I know that never in a million years did they want LDR to be able to go 399, 40. That was not the intent. But it's so difficult, and as long as everybody's like neck and neck, side by side together, then I don't think it matters.
No, and realistically, I look at like records. They're awesome. It's awesome to see those big numbers, but the competitor in me, I'm looking at what you're doing consistently because that's what's going to win races. A 450 something Radio versus the World trim, awesome. But you got to be on the edge for that. It's what you're able to do consistently to turn on the win lights. That's where you want to be.
No, I mean, absolutely. The, in RVW, I think we have, oh man, I think there's 55 entries in the RVW. Now there has been a couple bad accidents lately, and people blowing up engines, different things have happened and a couple cars won't be able to make it. But I mean, 55 like real style RVW cars coming. I'm just like overwhelmed with that deal. And like you said, the if people going 350s and 360s, that's all great. What I want to see for like No Mercy and what evens up the field is usually the weather is warmer and everything. I don't know if we'll see anybody go much faster than low 360 something. But if they're all going 360s side by side and all the combinations are close, then that's really what I need to see for No Mercy.
Oh yeah, that's what makes, great racing great is, it's not always fun to see the number one qualifier, like back in the Nitro days, when they were a tenth or two above the field, number one. That kind of takes away from it at some point. But yeah, definitely close racing is what people want to see and what they want to enjoy.
Oh yeah, you want to? I mean, yeah, it's what I like about RVW, and everybody we've talked about this before. But it's cool to see an all-out, screw blower sitting there with alcohol shooting out of it and everything pulling up against a nitrous car or a turbo car. We definitely want where everybody can bring whatever they want to run. And that's what I like about the whole thing is that you allow in all the different combinations, and if they can all compete with with one another, very closely, people are going to like that. The fans love seeing, you know, one guy's purging one thing, one guy's spooling coming into the beams, and it's like you're on the edge of the seat. You don't know what's going to happen.
And again, with speaking of, you know, with variety and stuff like that, then you have Pro 275, which is another class which has an interesting variety of vehicles. And that's that to me, that's right up there with LDR because it has variety and, you know, you'd never know who's going to crank off a pass and win in that class. That's what makes it, again, interesting to watch.
And with the rules now, you know, we took – I wanted to take a step forward with Pro 275 because I think that it will eventually be the next big class, okay, as far as heads-up, eighth-mile, door-slammer type thing. I think we're going to all want to find out how fast somebody can go on a 275 tire. And, you know, I opened up the rules a little bit on Pro 275 – as far as the engine combinations and allowing in the bigger power adders and stuff to it, because I really think that a killer, you know, Pro 275, Outlaw 275 deal is going to be really cool to watch over the next 4 or 5 years. And so I'm excited about Pro 275. I want to take a look at it this race, and this is going to help us determine where we are, because this set of rules have never been ran before. So, you know, with the weights and everything being different, I'm kind of curious what's going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's when you start tweaking stuff like that and seeing which direction it's going to go can definitely make it interesting. And like you said, the big, you know, you can throw as much power as you wanted to open up to it. But the tire, you know, the Mickey Thompson 275 is a great tire. But in the end, it's still that's going to be a limiting factor for sure.
At some point, there's a limitation on all this stuff. What it is, I don't know. It's like the 315 tire. You know, what's the limitation for that tire? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to tell you this. Somebody's going to go 340s with that 315. It may be a year from now before it happens or a year and a half, but somebody's going to go 340s with that tire. I believe it's definitely physically possible to do it. I just I don't know what it's going to take to do it, but I think that when somebody goes 349 somewhere, it's going to be the shot heard across the world. I'm just telling you that.
And then the call comes into Mickey Thompson headquarters, and you'll be like, they did what? The tire, what? They did what?
Yeah. I mean, you got to admit, I mean, if someone ever breaks that barrier, I mean, you can't go anywhere from there though. Right. I mean, it's even like someone said, oh man, you know, 359, you know, it's going to be a long time before, you know, and I mean, we got a nitrous car that went 57, you know, and it's not done yet. You know, if we go from 360 flat, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, now we're going to go, let's say we go 355 in February or March. You know, I mean, that's heading down a pretty narrow deal there. I mean, that's fast.
Oh yeah, and the issue then you run into is you'll max it out there, and then you know the course will become, well, what about, you know, doing on a quarter mile? And that's where you start getting into some territory, because every guy I've talked to that's gone really fast on the radial, the full quarter mile, is like, it's fun to a point. They said then it gets scary, because it's like you're taking that tire into something where it's just, it physically wasn't, you know, designed for.
Right. Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, most people didn't think we were ever going to see the 440 range, you know, then 430s and 420s. And it's like when the 399 happened, and then, you know, every time that it happens, everybody says that that's the max limit, you know. And, I mean, now we've gone, you know, 390, 380, 370, 360, 350. And, you know, and it hasn't been this huge amount of time. You know, I want to say No Mercy 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago, I'm going to say or so, Kevin Mullins shocked the world when he went 411.
Yeah, I remember.
You know
that.
What I'm saying? So 6 years, 6.5 years ago, I don't know what, but – I mean, it hasn't been, you know, that long that we've gone from a 411 down to a 350.
Yeah, it's like what it was when Nitro Racing was making all those leaps and bounds. It took years, decades, and all of a sudden it's like truncated timetable to make all of that happen. And I think also we haven't hit the point, like with the Nitro stuff, they limit the speeds to that and people kind of get on the NHRA for it. That is purely because of safety, because there's a massive difference between, you know, when you start going 340, 350 miles an hour, that's just, people don't understand how fast that really is.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we all know that the way the technology and the power and everything is, you know, you keep letting them cars run, you know, quarter mile instead of 1,000 foot, you know, I mean, how fast is that? I don't even know what it would be capable of right now if you let them actually tune for quarter mile, you know what I mean, all out stuff. I don't know what they would even be going right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Goodyear, I think Goodyear kind of did step in a little bit, like, hey, let's calm this party down a little bit, because, you know, those car, like you said, you just, with the technology and what they're doing at 1,000 feet, you get the people, oh, it's only, you know, 320 more feet. You know, I'm not a physics expert. However, I know that race tuners will find a way to use every inch of that last bit of the track, and they're going to turn those cars up to ways that you couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, even if you look, I mean, you see how much they've picked up from the 660 to the 1,000 foot. Let me assure you, that car is freaking coming. You know what I'm saying? And if it was to go from 1,000 to 1,320, I'm going to tell you right now, that thing's be close to be going straight back to the future. You know, I mean, you know, it's those things would be, they're crazy. They're crazy fast.
I go to a couple of NHRA races a year for the big show stuff, and
I'm sorry.
it's different flavors for everything. And that's what I tell people. I go to I've been to the U.S. Nationals. I go to the biggest heads up, you know, radio deals, biggest no prep races, the World Cup, and all these different events. And it's interesting to see all of the different flavors of drag racing, which I enjoy. But standing trackside when a Nitro car is flying by is just, it's amazing and it's terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I definitely, I don't know if I'd want to be standing there either. I, you know, of course, I'm on the other side, you know, and I'm biased, but I, like, when I'm in the middle and I have, let's say, Stevie Jackson on one side and we have Alex Laughlin on the other side with both of their blowers coming by, like, I don't know, that's what does it for me, you know what I mean? And it's blowing people's hats off of the stage up there, and it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just a very, very exciting thing, you know, for the atmosphere when that happens also.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, the way that I explain it to people is you go to these different events and you see different crowds and it's different levels and kinds of excitement. It's very interesting for me, you know, from a journalist to really get to, like, dig in and see all these different flavors and the passions and how the fans react to it. And I think that's what really kind of keeps the sport vibrant and interesting is, you know, to me, those are the you know, spectator kind of favorite deals. And then you have the big, you know, your bigger money bracket racing stuff, which is, you know, more of a participation kind of thrill. But, you know, there's nothing like being at an outlaw heads up race when it's just an electric atmosphere. You know, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, you know, I like to get on the internet and obviously cause as much havoc as I can.
Oh, just a little.
But there's all kinds of awesome racing out there. And it's there might be a lot of things that I don't go to, but, you know, they're bringing in huge crowds of people, different things going on. I mean, you look at, Jason Miller's World Cup up there, you know, that thing is, you know, phenomenal as far as, you know, bringing in all different, you know, imports and domestics. And there's, you know, you have all the people with racing no sense. I mean, no prep. And, you know, they have all their deal going. So there's a lot of drag racing seems to be, you know, really, really hot. You know, I mean, you just have different, different groups of people, you know, doing a lot of different things out there.
You know, I used to think no prep, honestly, I was like, this is the dumbest idea ever, until I went to one of the races and then it clicked. I'm like, oh my God, this is literally like when I used to go, you know, used to go to street race, I'm like, this is just street racing with a little, you know, with a timing, you know, a timing system and a wind light, and you don't have people arguing and, you know, pulling as many weapons. But it's watching those guys race and what they do and how they do it is, Dwayne Mills put it the best. He said, literally, this is just taking a modern car with making big horsepower and trying to put it down a track that we were racing on, you know, 15 years ago.
And I like all that part of it. I think, though, that there's still a realm of some dangerous stuff, just like when the guy got killed the other day on the one where they closed off the street. And that's my problem with having a 3,000-4,000 horsepower car. You know, I mean, the first part of the track, I'm not as concerned about everything. It's down track when these cars are really up there making steam, kind of like we were talking about, you know, how the fuel cars look, how fast they're on the top. I just don't know. I think we also need to be careful with, I think a professionally ran no prep thing is great. I think somebody who's just trying to make some money off a no prep event at somebody's backyard track, I think we need to be real careful before something really bad happens again.
Oh yeah. And the thing is even I've been to some pretty sketchy outlaw tracks, and that I wouldn't even go down if they were prepped, that, you know, it's
right.
Just,
even if they were prepped. Exactly. Exactly.
It comes as a racer. When you pull through the gates and your spider sense says, this might not be a good idea, don't do it. I've come to that conclusion that if you come to a track and, you know, the ambulance looks like it came from Cannonball Run, it's got that creepy lazy eye doctor in there, don't go down the track.
Probably not a good idea. You know, and that's what I've always tried to, and, you know, I hate harping on this because I don't want people to think I'm just beating up, but, you know, these racetracks that also have metal guardrails on them, listen, guys, I don't know if you've been watching it, but it will hurt you. You know, these cars flipping all over these metal guardrails and it cutting stuff up by can openers. You know, I just think it needs to be done in a very safe environment, and I think that everything's fine. You know, I just think the facilities and that's, I think that's what we need to be careful about with the no prep stuff, in my opinion.
What I've seen him do, I've seen it, I don't think I've seen him do it at No Prep Kings, but I know at Outlaw Armageddon, what they'll do is past the finish line, they'll put a light coat of spray down there just to help, you know, keep the cars kind of glued down a little bit. Because at that event, that to me is the World Series of No Prep racing, as Bill, because you see a lot of good, fast racing. And I think they only piled up one car there this year. But again, it comes down to, again, being as safe as possible. And a lot of those, you know, guys and gals that do it, they, you know, realize that this is sketchy as hell. It's street racing-ish with very fast cars. And it's definitely, it's like you said, you got to be, if you're going to do something stupid, be safe about it.
Right. And that's, I guess, my whole thing. I don't care what everybody goes and does and tries to have fun with it. That's all great. You know what I mean? But, I mean, you still got to be careful. I mean, you don't want to go up in an airplane and jump out without a parachute. You know what I mean? And if they're going to race it, that's great and fine, but there's still a safe way to do it, or safer way to do it. And that's all I think, you know, this deal that happened where you have a finish line and then there's no barriers or anything, and you have telephone poles and trees and stuff that somebody can run into, that to me is just a horrible situation. It really is. And I think that these guys just, you know, I think that this closing off the street thing is not a good idea. I mean, I know it seems all great and everybody's want to jump out and have a good time. But I think if you're going to close off a street, you got to make sure that after the finish line, that this thing is just as safe as it is going down the track.
Oh yeah. And I've seen a few tracks where, you know, we've gone down to pick up our driver. I'm like, there's no guardrails down here at all.
Yeah. No guardrail. And we got light poles at the end of the racetrack. You know what I mean? What kind of, you know, dumb stuff is that? You know, and so it's just about being safe. Listen, everybody wants to go. Everybody's going to the drag race to have a good time. We all know that. Just like me, you, whatever. We all want to go. We all want to have a great time. But I think at some point, you know, they listen. It's just like our guys. You know, I'm having to bring in extra security because the deal where people are doing burnouts and the people are standing in front of them, even the people who actually crew on the cars that are standing in front of them. I just don't understand why we have people standing in front of the cars while they're doing a burnout. Oh. These people need to help. They need to wake up and help us also. And don't get in front of a car doing a burnout.
As a crew person myself, I can honestly say I have never, even past the Christmas tree, stood out on a track, on a hot track when cars are doing burnouts. I'm always off the side where, I tell people, you got to have an escape plan when you're at the track and you're in the restricted area. And, you know, as a media person, taking the pictures I take and doing burnout shots and being on the starting line, you know, it's my job. It's a calculated risk. And I try to be as safe as I can when I'm up there. And if you're a spectator or a fan standing up there, you know, statistically, you're increasing your risk for something to happen to you. That's just
absolutely,
that is the math of the situation. And I did that story on that donk car that the balancer let go and, you know, ripped that dude's face off. You know, it's people don't understand how, you know, there's a million and one ways you can get hurt on the starting line, even as a crew guy. Just there's so many things that could happen. And if the second you let your guard down, that's when bad stuff is going to happen.
It absolutely is, man. I mean, I was standing next to a guy, even behind the car, where one of the Burns collector mufflers came off, got underneath the rear tire, flew back, hit him in his chest, and, you know, knocked him down. And, you know, luckily it didn't break any ribs or anything when it hit him. But, you know, I've seen that where the balancers come off and go like three or four, like when they hit the ground spinning, they'll go 300-400, you know, feet back somewhere. You know, I mean, obviously there's risks involved. I understand that people go, oh, well, there's risk involved. You know, it's just, and I understand that there's risks involved, but we can still try to, you know, and just like on our part, we're going to try our best to, you know, try to get these people. Anything can happen, but we need to try to get the risk down as low as we can.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, people want to be a part of the action and stand up there, and that's all fine, well, and good, but you just, the problem is when something happens and you're that close, you know, you're not going to have time to react. I almost got clipped by a car in the burnout box, and a driver that was standing beside the vehicle was barely paying attention, and he got nudged by the vehicle that was in a burnout box that just for some reason it made a funny move, you know?
Absolutely. And it can happen at any time, man. It really can.
And, you know, it's...
But, you know,
it's a simple.
I just hope we can have fun with everything and try to keep anybody from getting injured. Oh, you know, and that's what, you know, with, like I said, I like to harass people on the internet and, you know, try to, you know, create controversy. But I want everybody to come out there and have a great time, you know. And also these guys in the pits, you know, if you're riding these four wheelers, you know, and you're going to pick up your cars and all that kind of stuff, you know, slow down and take it easy. I know you're pumped up because you just set a record pass and you're wanting to get down there. But, you know, we need to get down there safely. You know, we can celebrate plenty as long as we're all not hurt.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the other, I jokingly tell people, I said, I'm more afraid of getting hurt in the pits than I am trackside, because you never know when someone's not going to be paying attention and, you know, clip you with a God knows what.
No, I know. I mean, even, you know, and obviously silly things happen, you know. Unfortunately, like Jamie Hancock's dad, he wasn't really doing anything wrong, but the air part of the front of the car there, Jamie said, for the scoop, started to fly off, and his dad tried to reach down, and you know, and that's what, you know, got his legs all broke up. And then another, you know, incident, and it shake down when the lady got ran over by the golf cart, you know. And it's like, things happen. It's just, if everybody would just, you know, slow down, you know, stop, you know, the being in a rush thing really, unfortunately, just, it causes, you know, problems to happen. You know, we had a guy that hit a lady at Valdosta with one of the mules or something and like hit her in the back when she came by, you know, the mirror or something. And they never even slowed down, man. You know, we had to go chase them down to find out, you know, what was going on. So if everybody will just slow down a little bit, I mean, let's face it. If you're only going 3 or 4 or 5 miles an hour through the pits, you know, and you bump into somebody, it's going to be a lot different than if you're trying to go 30 mile an hour through there.
Huge difference.
So, you know, if we hopefully we can get everybody to slow down and pay attention and just have fun, man. I mean, that's what driving should be. We should all be going out there having a great time, man. And it's, and I know, I think we might have touched on this before, but if you don't care, like, the, you know, when you get to the gate at Valdosta, I want you to come in with this great attitude. I don't want you to drive 2,500 miles so you can be harassed at the gate. You know, and I know that's, I'll probably talk, I think me and you might have talked about this before, but it's one of my biggest pet peeves, Brian. It's just, I want people to get to the gate and be excited that we have, you know, Kay or somebody there to greet them, to like, let's have a great weekend. You know, don't drive $2,500 so you can be harassed when you get to the gate.
Oh yeah, totally, totally.
You know, so I'm hoping that we can, not let anybody down, you know, and give them that feeling, you know, when they get there.
Definitely. And before we wrap things up here, you know, what are your three biggest predictions for No Mercy?
I'm going to say X275 is extremely tight with the new rule set. I'm going to say that I don't think there's going to be any combination that, when we leave No Mercy, I don't think there's going to be a huge rules like thing going on. I think it's going to be a lot closer than everybody thinks, or that, you know, some of the, you got people who are still complaining. I think that's going to be a lot closer than everybody thinks, and I think that it's going to be heading in a good direction for X275. And I'm going to predict on this one, No Mercy has been a funny thing. Like, No Mercy has had a lot. I don't know if you've, over the years, we've had different winners. Now, don't get me wrong. Dwayne Mills did slide in there, you know, and get two No Mercy wins in Radio versus the World. But we had Kevin Mullins. We had Jamie Hancock. We had Jeff Neiser. We've had some guys to where they've come out of nowhere. Like when Neiser won it, it was just out of the clear blue that all of a sudden, boom, he shows up and wins the thing. Like no one saw Neiser winning that deal. When Kevin Mullins showed up, nobody saw Mullins, you know, sliding in there and winning that thing. So No Mercy has always kind of been like that. I think we're going to have another winner like that. It could be, again, another guy who's never won Radio versus the World that could slide in there. I know of some that are coming, that if, it could be a new winner again, which would be cool with me. I mean, I would love to see it. But it's, I think that you're going to see a different winner in RVW, someone who hasn't won at Valdosta before.
Right on. What's your third big prediction?
Man, I predict that something will happen at Valdosta that you have never seen before at any drag race. And I know that because I'm doing it.
Vague in general and right down Broadway.
Yeah, I predict that somebody will be shooting some pictures, posting something. And I predict that somebody will piggyback the shit right out of it at some point. So,
you're like the weatherman. Something's going to happen. I don't know what, but it's going to happen, and you're going to want to check it out.
I will guarantee you that by Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday, that you're going to see something that you haven't seen in a drag race before. You've seen it before. You've just never seen it implemented this way.
Right on. Well, our time here is coming to again on this segment. And as always, I like to give my guests their best ability to impersonate John Force and do their plugs and whatnot. So tell everybody where they can find the event, where they need to get tickets, and, you know, what's going on.
Obviously, if you go to racedxp.com for any of your ticket needs there, we do all of our ticket stuff through the FOTE. And you don't have to buy them online. You can buy them right at the gate. But if you go to racedxp.com and you can go check out all of the it has all the scheduling. And I just want everybody to come out and have a good time.
Well, and it's a drag race, and it's guaranteed to be a good time. And thanks for coming on the show once again, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Ryan, thanks for having me again, brother.
Thank you.
See you soon, buddy.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Donald for stopping by and doing some talking with us. And as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week's folks.